Wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we are so happy that you've chosen to tune in to DLC, your downloadable commentary for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be, completely free. And that's thanks to our sponsor this week, Squarespace. Squarespace! They made that possible, bringing the show to you completely free. DLC, of course, the show all about gaming in its many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, and also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff 2N1T Kanata, and I'm joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis. The guy who took me to a high school football game this weekend. None of that was weird. Mr. Christian Spicer! Welcome, Christian.
Thanks. Hey, Jeff. It was fun. It was our first old married couple double date to a high school football game, and it was awesome.
Now I'm an old married couple. I anticipate lots more of those. It was very awesome. We had our Friday Night Lights kind of wish fulfillment, although didn't really feel much like Friday Night Lights.
No, well, the home team, the team we were rooting for, won, but at some point you asked if there was a mercy rule. I mean, it was a high school game. I felt bad for the other kids because, anyway, we'll get it. Kids were slapping their own helmets as they dropped passes. The other team did not look good.
Yeah, it was hilarious. Well, this is not a sports podcast. No, it's a gaming podcast. DLC stands for your downloadable Kanata, your downloadable Christian. But this week, get ready, because DLC now stands for Diamond Club's leading chord killer, because we've got the host of Night Attack, Chord Killers. He's on DiamondClub.tv, not to mention Scam School and Hacking the System on Nat Geo, the king of the Schwood Empire, and the guy who taught me how to eat fire, Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Okay, man, just tell me you planned for all of that to rhyme. It's freaking beat poetry that I'm hearing right now, and I'm deeply in love with it. It's very well done.
That's how we roll here at DLC. I'm so excited. I've been wanting to have you on for a while now. Very, very excited to have you here.
Dude, excited to be here. Also, really fascinated in the whole, like, high school sports phenomenon. Like, because I understand, like, all of sports is essentially reality television, where we have ascribed backstories to each of the characters, and then we watch the roulette wheel, you know, of emotion. Like, oh, is the black team going to beat the red team? I don't know. I have a bet on the one or the other. Like, what drew the two of you to find yourself at a high school football team? Like, did one of you personally know one of the players?
No, not even a little bit. It just turns out that Christian's new house that he lives in is a walking distance from a high school football stadium. That's actually really nice.
A very nice stadium where, like, mountains in the background, like, a lot of filming has happened at this stadium. It's very picturesque, especially for high school. So it's too dumb not to go.
I'm not gonna lie, man. It's like my eyes would never make it to the field. I'd be too busy people watching. Holding hands and the who's making out under the stands and whatnot.
That's exactly 100%. What we're doing the whole time and figuring out the, Mrs. Finkelstein's English class is, who's the hot teacher and who's the kid that is ostracized and what's the band doing and all that fun stuff. Yeah, for sure.
I think you just admitted to being two grown-ups who stalked a high school, but that's cool. I say
yeah. It was fun. Anyway, we're talking video games, and we got to start the show the way we always do, and that's with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we try to convince one another of the most important stories that are happening in the world of video games and board games this week. You can always submit stories for us to think about during the week, consider for this segment, by using our hashtag on the Twitters. That hashtag is DLCSOTW, or by submitting them in our subreddit over at reddit.com/r/5x5DLC. Brian, as our guest, I'm going to give you first pick. What do you think is the most important story this week?
I'll tell you what, man, nothing could be more relevant or on time than this story about the horrific faces showing up in NBA 2K. 2K15. I spent like 20 minutes just like, it was like looking at the meth, not even once, before and after pictures. You had all of these players, and I guess you might need to walk me through this, but what I assume from what I gathered is that you could upload images that would be mapped onto the faces of these characters, right?
Yeah. Hopefully it has a face scanning feature. NBA 2K15 has a face scanning feature, so you can have a customizable your face on the player of your choice. And unfortunately, some people are discovering how horribly wrong it can go.
I'd say it's a wake up call. Like this is who you actually are. I'm sorry.
Yeah, as you said, it's the Halloween season. It's Shocktober. It's scary games are coming out in droves. Alien Isolation's coming out and Evil Within's coming out. There's no more frightening, nightmare inducing video game on the market right now than NBA 2K15. If you see these pictures, I challenge you to have a restful night of sleep, because they are disturbing on every level.
Especially just knowing, like, that's deep down how everyone else views you. Just know that this is what you truly are. Sort of killed everything right there. I'm sorry. You're hideous. There, now I've said it.
Little known fact, it was actually the same technology, different developers, but same technology used to make the orcs' faces in Shadow of Mordor. It's just user-submitted NBA 2K15 faces.
Kind of blew my mind. Talk about horrific. But yeah, these are, I urge everybody to check out the gallery that you can find. We found this over at joystick.com. They posted a link to the images. Words cannot describe how disturbing this feature is.
Now, you say words can't describe. I mean, I feel like it's our job for the audio listeners to at least try to describe. For example,
no.
we've got Melty Face House Cat. Inverted we've got Mr. Predator after a horrific car accident.
We've got Toxic Avenger,
one quarter porcine. I think we can't put words to these.
And there's one guy whose name is just Why God Why. That's a very timely story for the season, indeed. I should also mention that we usually take calls on the show. Unfortunately, our calling system is down today. So everybody that's excited to call into the show, I apologize. We'll be back, I hope, next week with that functionality back in place. But we are the melted face of call-in shows at this point. Christian, what is your pick for story of the week?
My story of the week is the launch, air quote, of Drive Club being and remaining such a disaster. The game came out, you know, midnight or Tuesday, the day after we recorded last week's show. People that listen to the show and listen to our daily E3 coverage know how impressed I was with the game coming away from E3. And then the videos that were coming out from the people in the small beta, it just looked amazing, and the weather effects. And I was super excited to have a circuit racer again. And wow, what a disaster. If you don't know, the big hook of this game, originally, you know, scheduled to be a launch game, delayed a year, and social integration was a big part of this game. And you form clubs and, you know, race against each other and challenges and all this different types of stuff you've seen in these games. This was to be the underpinning of this game. And the game came out and the servers just buckled under the pressure. Online didn't work. People couldn't get in. Now, some people can get in, but even if you're online, not all of the online features are available to you. The PS Plus free version of the game that was promised a year ago when the game was originally scheduled to come out still hasn't come out, they say, because of server issues. They don't want to increase the load. There's some people saying, oh, it's because they want you to buy the game and not give you the free game. I don't think that's true, but what a mess. This is, it's horrible. And I feel bad for the team, but Rushy, the Paul Ryshkinski, however you say his last name, the director of the game, has tweeted out things saying, you know, they tested it. They thought it was going to work. They did simulated large load tests. Everything seemed fine. And then he hinted at consumers maybe getting refunds or compensated. Like, what?
Everything was fine, mess. And then I spilled my coffee on the console, and the sparks happened, and I don't know.
Johnny Five is no longer alive. What a mess. Did you? So for me, this is big because I was so stoked for this game, and now I don't know. I just don't think I'll ever buy it. It really puts a sour taste in my mouth.
Actually, I'm 100% on Christian's side. Like there are movies, like I try not to listen to people to tell me anything they feel about any movie because I will have 100% enthusiasm for a movie. And then the moment I hear, it's all right, I won't go see it, right? And so likewise, even though like you only get one chance at the launch, right? Like when we did a Game On, we had messed up audio and it's like, that's all it took. People gave us one try. They heard the messed up audio and then they were done.
Well, Final Fantasy 14 begs to differ. It had a second chance at life.
It came back as a whole new game. If they come out with Drive Club version 2.0, maybe, you know, I think it would take something like that, like a relaunch of this game. And also, unfortunately for them, Forza Horizons is incredible. And we're in the season where games are going to keep coming out and great games are coming, you know, or arguably hyped games. We don't know if they're great because they're not out yet. And I think this game has missed its window. It's still not working properly. I mean, What a mess. I think this is a game that you should 100% be able to return, whether or not Walmart or GameStop accepts it. Sony or Evolution Studios should refund your money because it is broken. And whoever is responsible, you know, or whatever is responsible, there should be serious repercussions. Like, people are saying, oh, an online game not working at launch, what a surprise. Yeah, okay. But I think that's part of a bigger issue, right, that we've come to expect that.
What kind of repercussions can you get? Like, I don't know, maybe the stigma of having a broken game at launch? That seems like as bad as it gets.
Well, if you look at all the stories that are happening around Battlefield Hardline and how they are trying to live down their launch of Battlefield 4, I think that stigma, as you said, does stay. The stink of a bad launch does remain, and people remember that, and people are leery to trust you again on the next release. And I think that is significant.
My bold prediction is I don't think Evolution Studios, maybe it's not that bold, I don't think Evolution Studios survives this. I hope individuals don't lose their jobs. I never want people to be out of work and not able to support their families or do the things they love. I think they might be shuffled or rebranded or a new studio manager. I think something, even if it's just on the PR side, something is going to happen to shuffle the studio up or give it a new direction. Because, yeah, I mean, Battlefield had a long, storied, good history, and Battlefield 4 tarnished that. Evolution, while they made some great games like MotorStorm or whatever, they've never had huge, huge, huge sales successes. And now with this game coming out, I mean, it's a lemon. I don't know how you shop that studio anymore if you're Sony.
So you... Christian, you really, as much as you were excited about this game, you really aren't going to play it, even when they give you the PS Plus kind of free to try version eventually?
When the PS Plus version comes out, I will certainly download it and I will play it. But the window for me to spend serious amounts of time on this game is coming to a crashing halt. You know what I mean? That window is closing with Smash right around the corner. On Wii U, Bayonetta 2 apparently being the best action game ever made. I haven't dipped my toe into Alien yet. I know you've played some of that. That looks like a game I would like. It's hard. It's hard to go back to this game. And part of me too, changing, you know, and for TV, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I watched all of season one. I was disappointed by the show. I've heard season two is better and or good, but same I'm not here. Going to watch it. There's too much other good stuff out there for me to support or vote with my wallet or whatever. And it's just, yeah, I don't know why I should pat these people on the back and say, I'll play it now. No, you messed up. You said this thing would be out. We should expect it to work. I think we should hold companies and firms or whatever to a higher standard than just, oh, well, it didn't work. What do you expect? No, we should expect it to work. And maybe it's just because this is the first game that had a huge, horrible launch that I was excited for. This one feels worse than like SimCity or Battlefield, but maybe it's just because I wanted to play this game.
Yeah, this certainly wasn't a worse launch than either of those, I'll tell you that. I think you brought up a really interesting point in saying that we should be able to return these games. The idea that this industry as a whole has figured out a way to convince the public that they just can't return broken products, that you know you buy it and you're screwed. There's no lemon law for software is a little bit ridiculous. And I did return Battlefield 4 right after I bought it, which was great because the Origin service allowed that functionality.
Yeah,
Kudos to Origin for that. Yes, indeed. One thing you can say kudos to that service for. But no boxed store, no brick and mortar store that you walk into will let you return a piece of software, and that's just messed up. When these things can be put out in a unplayable state, in an unfunctional state, that's not cool. It's not acceptable.
Well, there's no accountability, right? Yeah. At that point, where like all of a sudden, you know, at least I used to work at the movie theater, and we would give refunds or rain checks to people who walked in and said like, "Hey, this movie was really, really bad, and I regret buying my ticket for this movie." We would say, "Here's a free ticket to another movie," because again, part of that was because like in movie theaters, it's like they make their money by selling concessions mm-hmm. while you're there. But there's an accountability for quality that persists. And you're right, outside of video games, like that's just gone in the video game world. Like it never existed. The idea is like, well, it's a $60 gamble and yeah. Maybe you'll like it, maybe you won't.
And I understand why that happened. I mean, piracy created that. People getting something from a store, copying it and returning it to the store. I get that, but we have to find a way to protect the consumer a little bit more than this, and to be able to purchase something that is a boxed retail version of a product that, you know, doesn't work as advertised, and then I can't return it. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I'd love to know, like, if there are smarter people than us three that have ideas on how you fix this, because I agree. Piracy. Piracy is a huge problem, because in the old days at EB Games, you could return, you know, games, new right. games. You could return them within whatever it was, 7 days, 10 days. And then, of course, people started to pirate games. You could even return PC games at my old, you know, local mom and pop shop before piracy became as easy as it was for everyone to do. I don't know what the fix is. I mean, is it just as easy as games advertised as like the way Sony announced the PlayStation 4, right? And we're features we hope to eventually include are resume right where you left off, have your friend jump in and take over your game. It's like Drive Club is like Drive Club, amazing circuit racing, and hopefully one day the ability to form a club with your friends. I don't know what the answer is, but it sucks.
Well, the club just got more exclusive.
This is one of the perverse things about the recent kerfuffle between, you know, the PS4 versus the Xbox One, was Xbox One said, we want to build in, and of course the only way to do this is with DRM and with developer cooperation or whatever, we want to build in the ability for you to loan out your games when you're not using them, to have a library system and blah, 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 blah. And instead, what the audience should have done is been like, heck yeah, down with physical media. Unfortunately, they utterly lost the PR battle, because PS4 walked around and said like, whoa, what's all this? Check in, check out, games, library, DRM crap. Am I right, people? Well, games be on discs, right? That's why PS4. And then everyone just went nuts. Like, yeah, screw you, Microsoft. But like, now I'm really regretting that's the world that we live in.
I was on that page way back then, and I got a lot of flack for it. But yeah, I wanted to make that transition full bore and jump in the same way that the first Xbox forced everybody to go broadband or go home. Like, you know, no, we're not putting a 56K modem.
56K modem, yeah, sure.
So you know, I wanted that to happen. And yes, there were downsides, and yes, there was worries about the camera and all that stuff. But I like the idea of pushing the paradigm forward and trying something new. And maybe we could have gotten to this place where some benefit resulted for the consumer, and everybody looked at it as a, you know, big brother doesn't want you to resell your games. But I felt like there could be – the upside could outweigh that. And at least having one
– huge way. No, I definitely feel like that's the case.
Yeah. Moving on, my story of the week – is kind of a throwback to a time that I thought was long past. But guess what, guys? A major software developer announced a new arcade game, as in an arcade, as in a place that you go and you put quarters into a machine and play a video game. And guess what? It looks freaking awesome. Namco Bandai revealed at New York Comic Con this week, they revealed Star Wars Battle Pod, which is a new sit-down arcade game for like the six arcades that still exist in this country. And it's Star Wars based. It's got this domed screen that envelops you in the action. It's based on Unreal Engine 3, and you play various missions from the original trilogy of Star Wars action sequences. You've got a speeder bike chase, you've got a Hoth, snow speeder AT-AT battle, you've got the trench run on the Death Star, all the hits that you would want. It looks beautiful. It's got this custom input with a very Star Wars-esque joystick and sort of, I don't know what you call, like a thruster, an accelerator bar that you push forward and pull back. I want to play this. This looks rad. What do you think, Brian?
I'm looking at the ad right now, and to me, so I'm going to assume that this is less of, there's no 3D-ness so much as like an immersive 360 view of everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Look, here's the thing. Arcade games were built on the novelty and the experience that they could provide that you could not get at home. And things are a little bit weird now that we have such high fidelity experiences at home. But if we can have these pods that you jump into and you have a 360 degree world view and you're totally roped in and stuff, that's something you ain't going to get at home.
Yeah.
I think in that regard, it's a smart move. I just wish that it was a step farther to where, we had some kind of 3D laser projection in your eyes or whatever, like something that uniquely really, cause as it looks right now, it's wrapped around your head, but it's not necessarily, 3D. Let me put it this way. Whatever you're getting out of this, you're going to be able to get out of your Oculus Rift in less than a year.
Well,
right? Am I right?
I'm sure it'll be far better in your Oculus Rift.
That's the problem, right? Is like you've got to leap over that uncanny valley. You can't have something that close.
Yeah, I guess. But, I mean, I want to check it out now, and it's got that cool, unique controller that you're not going to be able to get at home. It feels like you're holding onto a Star Wars type, X-wing joystick. That's kind of neat.
Yeah, I think what you're getting from this, well, one, arcades still remain fairly popular in Japan. I mean, you see new arcade games coming out. I mean, for instance, there's a Left 4 Dead arcade game and a version of Half-Life that people have made for arcades in Japan, and this is Japanese developer. But this game to me screams Dave and Buster's. I mean, it's easy to say that.
That's arcades literally
don't
where
exist
it's debuting.
In the U.S., but Dave and Buster's are everywhere. This is Star Wars. It's classic Star Wars.
That was on me. Started to play something else. Go ahead.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah no, that was on me. Like, I was watching the video of the Star Wars Battle Pod, and then an ad played, so I immediately hit mute. Sorry about that.
Oh, no worries. But I mean, it's a Dave and Buster's game. You know what I mean? And it's Star Wars. It's classic Star Wars. It's just score attack. You can't die in the game. It's a pod that you sit in that you look cool. And the average, I'm assuming here, business party, work party that goes to Dave and Buster's doesn't know what Oculus Rift is, doesn't know it's coming out. They sit in this thing. They think it looks cool and it's immersive, and they pay $5 to play it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It literally is being debuted at Dave & Buster's. That is the first place you can play it, starting, I guess, in November. And then it's going to be released into wider arcades, although I don't know where to find those, really.
We need to go to 82 or 88.
I know.
LA one. It's awesome.
Well, there's one that's opening really close to my house, too. And I think it may have just opened or is about to open. Anyway, so yeah, maybe they're making a slight comeback. But I think you're absolutely right, Brian. And another story from New York Comic Con reinforces that. This promotional thing that DreamWorks did for How to Train Your Dragon 2's Blu-ray release, they custom made Oculus goggles that looked like toothless, which is pretty cool if you look at the picture. And they threw people into this custom made Fly on a Dragon Oculus game. And they had they, you know, stepped it up a little bit as well. And you sit on this wooden bench thing that is made to put you in a position like he, is sitting on the dragon in the movie. You're like leaning forward and you're riding on the back of something, and it's got a wind machine that blows wind in your face that has a flap that opens and closes based on what's happening inside the game. So it gives you directional wind based on the direction you're flying. So that's rad. I mean, this is okay.
This is the thing, right? Like, there are two things that happen during the Oculus Rift experiences. Number one, first of all, you want to believe that you are lost in this moment, that you are flying on the back of a dragon and all that. And to that regard, like smart, it's great that it's an immersive world. You already understand the context of. It's great that they're blowing air in your face and that you believe. You're like, oh, look at me, I'm on the back of Toothless or whatever. There's the other part that is excruciatingly aware of the fact that you are wearing a black whatever on your face. Like, at the end of the day, I'm going to feel better knowing that I'm wearing like a clown costume that looks like Toothless than just some black whatever over my face. Like, I think by all objective measures, this should not matter, but it matters so much to me.
Really?
I would so rather be that goofball wearing a Toothless mask than the goofball wearing just a black whatever over his eyes.
Oh, I misunderstood. I thought you were saying it was a bad thing, but no, you're saying it's awesome to have, you have Toothless on your face, right?
Yeah, then you get to own it. You're like, yeah, whatever. Yeah. Hey, whatever, mortals. Y'all eating your coffee at Starbucks. I'm flying over Burke. Screw you.
Exactly. Yeah, and amplify that tenfold if you are 10, because a 10-year-old gets to put Toothless on his face and thinks it's the greatest thing ever, and my inner 10-year-old is digging on that too. Not to mention the fact that they cite a lot less nausea because of the seat vibrates and the wind that's blowing in your face. They said that really reduces the nausea that it causes. So that's a good thing too.
You guys put together one of the Google Cardboard alternatives or no. Google Cardboard itself?
Mm-mm. No.
I was astonished at how well it worked. Justin picked one up at a VR con and just tossed it my way. It took like 20 minutes to put it together. Used it on my iPhone 5S. And it was magic, and it doubly magic was handing it over to my 10-year-old and getting her to look around and see the world. Like, it was, tell you what, man, it's like we all feel like it's a little weird. We're a little bit freaked out. We think it's a little bit dorky, but within minutes, this is going to be the most normal activity for anyone to do.
Christian, what do you think?
I think it's a super smart play for How to Train Your Dragon 2. I mean, let's be honest, we're talking about How to Train Your Dragon 2 coming out on Blu-ray on a video game podcast. Well done, right? That's smart marketing. It took a little bit of time and money to develop this thing, and now you're getting play for it in places that you wouldn't, and it's a great movie, and now people are excited for it. I think we're more years away from VR becoming a thing that everyone does and is comfortable with. I don't think we're not going to get there, but I don't think it'll be anytime soon, but I'm all in favor of cool stuff happening.
Yeah, this isn't even going to be a product that they released. This really was just a promo thing for the Comic-Con, and you're right, people are talking about it. I wish that I had had an opportunity to try it. They said it was pretty cool, and again, the seat vibrates, the wind blowing in your face. I love that kind of next level stuff of adding extra senses to the experience of Oculus, and I think we're going to see.
Do you D-box?
Well, no. I think that's different. That's different.
It's awesome.
Is
it? It's expensive, but it's awesome.
I have no desire to do that. I really don't.
What is that?
D-Box is this like extreme movie theater viewing experience.
Where it like shakes you around and rumbles and blows air in your face and so on.
Exactly.
Dude, it's great. It's dumb, but for like a big dumb action movie, Jeff, next big dumb, I don't know where the closest D-Box in LA is, but I know where they are in Houston.
There's a Man's Chinese. The Man's Chinese has it.
Well, we're going to go. It's going to be great.
Here's what this pops into my mind is what they're doing, and obviously this is a particular demo or whatever, but remember, every movie since Toy Story that's a 3D animated film, they have all the assets. They have the world. They have everything laid out. They move virtual cameras through virtual sets or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's no reason that they can't 5 years from now or 2 years from now release versions of these movies that you strap onto your face with an Oculus Rift and everything's the same except for you can look around and watch the action like you're there like a ghost right over their shoulders, but actually feel 100% completely immersed in the world, looking all the way around. How huge would that be? How much would you love to be just in Andy's bedroom watching stories
like,
unfold?
Like this kind of creepy voyeur. I mean, the only point of reference that I have for that is the average cuts. What?
Plays?
Well, interesting. I was going to say the average cutscene in Half-Life 2. Because in Half-Life 2, the cutscene's happening. You happen to be present for it, but you can wander around, jump up and down, look over here, look over there, and they're still doing their thing as if you're paying attention to them. And there's a weird disconnect. If you cooperate, if you hang out like you're supposed to hang out contextually, then it all seems nifty and cool. But if you're in Toy Story World and you're like bopping around and they're doing their story, it might be more disconnecting. It might be stranger.
It's not how you watch the movie the first time, right? It's a sweet bonus feature because what makes cinema often so powerful is the director focusing your attention on what he or she wants you to see. And if you don't see those things, then you miss the, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio's ring being off in scenes in Inception or whatever, because you don't see it because you're looking at the waves crashing, being like, these waves look real, bro. But as an awesome bonus feature to go explore the world, like toy box mode or whatever, I think it'd be great. I do need to say, as someone who does enjoy going to high school football games, I have no desire just to hang out in Andy's room and see what he's doing.
Yeah. We should legally say that we have no desire to hang out in Andy's room. I think more interesting.
Andy's 18 and at college, in which case, like, bro, you want to hang? We're there for you.
I think it would be much more interesting to have interactive experiences that are just storytelling experiences that are ostensibly video games, you know, because they require my interaction. They require me propelling the story forward, but there's no gameplay. There's, you know, a character is waiting for me to walk down the hall in order for it to say the next thing. Or if I, you know, wander away or look in the wrong direction, it notices that and stops talking or says, hey, man, we're going over here. So that it has some sort of interactive hooks, but it's just there to tell me a story. I think that would be really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, maybe that approach in, Heavy Rain, in a Heavy Rain type game.
Yeah.
Be neat.
And keep in mind, I'm not proposing like this is the future of storytelling or whatever. What I'm thinking of mainly is here's a way to relatively cheaply go back and revisit existing stories that you already know and love. Like by definition, you're not going to do this unless you've already seen How to Train Your Dragon.
Right.
But what if you could rewatch How to Train Your Dragon and OBT dubs actually experience riding on the back of Toothless as you go? Like for that, I'm down. I'm 100% in.
Yeah, I definitely. Yeah, that sounds cool.
And it's not even that. Like, I'll watch the Neverending Story again. Just put me on the back of Felkor.
we just
go tease some bullies.
Let me ride flying things. That's all I care about. If it flies, let me ride it. Superman, put me on the back of Superman.
Yes. Let me rub Superman's shoulders. He's very strong.
The only thing I don't want to fly are those giant dumb bugs at the beginning of Man of Steel, because that shouldn't have been part of Man of Steel.
All right. On that note, I do need to take a break here. Let's decompress for a second.
I love Man of Steel. You and I are just going to have to disagree on this one. I was deeply engaged.
Let's thank our sponsor, Squarespace. Ugh, I love when Squarespace sponsors the show because I use Squarespace. I'm a fan. I dig it. My own personal website, jeffcanada.com, is housed entirely on Squarespace and has been for years before they ever sponsored this show. And why is that? Because it's easy, it's awesome, and it makes for very attractive, cool, unique websites. They've got design templates that you can use, but then you can alter so easily. It's all what you see is what you get. Drag and drop. Customize your website. Make it your own. Make it look really slick. Update it very easily. They've got apps that you can, just from your phone, you can update your website super easily. They've got 24/7 support through live chat and email. If you have any issues, any problems, you're confused by anything, or you want to try something really cool and outside the box, they're there to help. They're super responsive. I have used their support myself and can attest to the fact that these guys are great and super helpful, and they really make it so that anything you want to try, you have a resource to help you out. It's inexpensive as well. Plans start at only $8 a month, and that includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. So there's really no risk. There's even less risk because we're going to make it so that you can try their site, their resource, their construction tools without even having to put your credit card in. If you use our offer code, which is Jeff Sent Me, you go to squarespace.com/DLC and you use Jeff Sent Me as your show code. We'll give you 10% off your first purchase. You show support for our show and you can start using the site without even having to put in a credit card. You can build your website, check out, see if you like it, see if they're like you like their tools, and they won't even take your credit card until you're ready to try it. Also, if you have any reason to sell anything online, it comes with an online store built right into every website. That's really, really cool if you have any reason to sell anything. So even if you want to like have a bake sale at school and you want to have an online web portal, simple, easy. These guys are the best. I've been using them for years. I really dig Squarespace. Check them out, squarespace.com/DLC. Use that promo code Jeff Sent Me. It'll get you 10% off. And we really appreciate them supporting the show, so we hope you will support them in return. All right, dudes, what else we got here on stories for the week? Well, we got some of the more controversial stuff that was happening this week, including a story that was submitted on our subreddit by Reverend Bimmer about Xbox clarifying their parity clause. Now, if anybody was confused about what this was about, evidently Xbox has let it be known that if you want to publish a game on their platform, on the Xbox One, you need to publish it day and date with other platforms, or they don't want you on their platform. So if you want to come out with an indie game on your PS4, and then a month later you want to put it out on Xbox One, no, Microsoft says we're not interested in that. It needs to be day and date. And
hold on, real. I mean, that goes both ways, right? Like, what if you're like, well, I don't really like PS4. I just really want my game to be on, you know, Xbox One. Then I guess by that same rule, it's like they're like, no, you must also develop it. For the PlayStation.
I have a feeling they wouldn't be quite as upset about that. Okay, all right. I think what they're basically saying is we want to be at least on par with everybody else. If you want to be exclusive to us, high fives to you, but they're also saying if you want to be exclusive to somebody else, then that's your prerogative. But if you don't want to be exclusive to somebody else, it has to come out at the same time. Now, third parties and a lot of indie developers really are the ones that are crying foul because they're saying, you know, as small publishers, as independent game designers, we don't have the resources to develop games on multiple platforms at the same time. And basically, it's requiring us to delay a game so that we can then shift our development time over to Xbox One, develop it there, and then put out both at the same time. They don't like that. But Phil Spencer this week came out and made a statement about how this is really trying to create a feeling among Xbox One owners that they are, what's the term he used? First class, I think was. What is it?
Superior. Better than.
No.
The master gaming race.
No. I think it's a first-class citizen is what he wants. So
better type of person. Got it.
You have a problem with this, Brian?
No, I don't. To be honest, it's like what I think is dumb is why on earth would you put out a press release about this? This is dumb.
Well, I think actually like, he said it on a podcast.
If what you have is something that can compete on its own, then let it compete on its own and then let it get this reputation. If you feel the need to create, you know, an exclusive vibe, you know, then quietly, you know, send, you know, roses to everyone who's part of your team or whatever. And then they'll all feel better and they'll all feel cooler than you. This idea that objectively you would state this thing is a bad move. It's an obvious ploy. It's lazy, lazy, lazy work.
Well, okay. So, I don't disagree with that, but I think really what happened was they have this policy. Some people pointed it out publicly and said, hey, we're trying to create a game and they won't let us put it on their platform unless it comes out at the same time. there was a big kerfuffle about that. And so then he came out and made a statement as to why they have that policy. So it wasn't like, hear ye, we now have this policy. Yep. It was more like an explanation of why people are pissed off. Now, whether that explanation is sufficient or not is another issue, but that's what happened.
The biggest problem with this, though, is in the next level explanation where it's like, but we're willing to work with people. What expletive? That's like saying that we're going to be in, well, it doesn't even matter what I may or may not know from, it doesn't matter. We're going to be the bullies in the room. If you're a small dev or a dev we haven't worked with before, we're laying it on the table. We're putting our bellies up to the bar and we're going to bully you into doing what we want to do because this is in our policy. We got to do it. It's in our policy. Oh, okay. Hey, Epic, we really like you. I get it. You struck a deal with it. We'll let that slide. Oh, this is an indie game that's really popular. We want it on our system too. We'll do it. It's creating a cool kids club and a not cool kids club. And if you have the leverage to come in, we'll work with you. You either have a policy or you don't have a written policy. Or if you have a written policy, you certainly then don't say, but sometimes we're willing to look the other way and we'll do whatever, but not for you. Not your game. Nope. We're sticking to this policy for you. Come on in. Yeah. Do whatever you want. Oh, seriously, Microsoft, just hire someone that isn't an idiot in terms of saying things publicly.
Well, I don't understand why that bothers you so much. I mean,
are you kidding me?
You know that that's the truth. You know that's the truth for every company across the world, that whatever 100%. They say is one thing, but if they need you, then whatever they say is something else. I mean, there's nothing.
Right, but you don't run that up. I'm agreeing with Brian now. You don't run that up the flagpole and wave that around. That is a hear ye moment. Why do you say that? People that know that there are exceptions.
What do you gain from it? Yeah.
But I don't understand this position of saying, why don't you lie to me better? Like, the truth, no, the truth
called,
is.
That's called PR.
Real quick. No, there's a difference between lying and like rubbing it in your face. When you treat people like cattle, when you could treat your consumers like cattle and explain, hey guys, here's what's going to happen. We're going to release this thing and we're going to need all of y'all to feel this way at this time. That's dumb. Instead, what you do is if what you want to do is make them feel really good about buying your stuff. You behind the scenes, you're like, you write them a letter like, hey, it's me, the CEO of company. I want you to know personally that it meant a lot to me that you bought things. So here's a flower. Hope we're best buds, but that's up to you. Bye. Like that's the way you be seduced. It's the difference between, you know, taking someone by force and courting them. We want to be courted.
But this
right?
is exactly what I'm in the position now where I'm defending Microsoft, but that's exactly what this statement is saying. He's literally saying to all of their consumers that we're doing this to try to make you feel awesome. We're doing this to try to make you feel like first-class citizens. We're doing this so that because you bought an Xbox One, you can be guaranteed that something isn't going to come out first somewhere else, and you're going to feel like a second-class citizen and the afterthought that it comes out on Xbox. We want to protect you guys. That's the content of what he's saying. But he's also saying if you're a developer and you're worried about this, talk to us. And if
that's such I'm gonna start swearing. That's such crap. You can't I'm so glad that Brian is actually Mark from marketing and we have him on the show. Two, you can't say that and then take it away in the same freaking press release or statement, right? Where you say, consumers, we're going to protect you. You can guarantee, that's so dumb. You can guarantee that you're going to get the same thing day and date. Welcome to the Xbox family. We're going to look after you. Okay, are you done listening, consumer? Developer, we didn't mean it. We will do whatever you want.
No.
It's not that they don't mean it. It's that they're all like, it's like, are you done, consumer? And then they lean over like, developers, do you see what I just did? I got this girl right on the string.
You guys,
I tell her that we're going to do whatever, but she'll always feel number one because of this secret plan we got. Like, you don't say that in public, man. You just treat her like a lady.
No. Have you guys not been in the situation? This just happened to me, actually, and this is what it reminds me of. I'm having a high school reunion coming up.
All I can picture is the next line is like, I'm there at Shakey's alone drinking. Settles up next to me.
I have a high school reunion coming up, and the tickets for the high school reunion are very expensive. And the person running the reunion said, here's the ticket price. We need to sell a bunch of these. Hope you guys buy them. If anybody has a problem with this price and can't afford it, talk to me. Maybe we can work something out. That is ostensibly the exact same thing that's happening here is, hey, we have this stringent policy. It seems extreme, but you know what? There is some flexibility in special cases. That's all they're saying. Are you worried about this? Are you freaking out about this as an indie developer? Come talk to us. Maybe we can figure something out. That is awesome of them to say. That's not dumb. That's not talking out of both sides of their mouth. The idea that you would hold them to the fire for that just boggles my mind.
No. It can be awesome in their heart, and it can be awesome that they have an intention to do these things. You can also have all of those things be pure and true and manage to use exactly the wrong words to express them. And I think that's what I'm feeling is like, wow, did you guys do a poor job of putting those thoughts into words?
Yeah, my dad used to say something to me all the time. He used to say, listen to what I mean, not what I say. And I always try to do that, you know, and I think that holding up to the sort of a semantic inquisition is a bit unfair, but people do it all the time. And I understand that the whole job of PR is to not get yourself in those positions, but I feel like,
I guess that's a problem too, right? Like that's their whole job. They're paid hundreds of thousands of dollars per person per year for the specific task of like, hey, express this, try not to make us look like jerks. And in this case, they kind of came across as jerks.
Fair enough. Speaking of, since we're in this place, in this heated place, there was a clarification about the issue that we talked about last week. Christian brought up as his story of the week last week. I actually got a lot of emails about this week as well, and people were upset at me for sort of shutting down the conversation. It's about the peas. All about the peas. I'm sure, Brian, you've heard about this story as well, about the new Assassin's Creed having fewer peas than we thought, and a 900p instead of 1080p.
You're doing it right now. You're being dismissive of it just
because
you're
think it's ridiculous. I think it's ridiculous.
People gave me a hard time for not giving it its due last week, and now
I still think it's ridiculous. But I'm bringing it up again. Aren't I nice for bringing it up again and letting you guys clarify? There was a clarification from Ubisoft, and again, this is PR speak and ridiculous, but.
Real, I'm sorry. We're talking about pixels, right?
We're talking about resolution.
Spare the second syllable to say pixels. No. We got to call them P's. Is that the thing now? Is that everything's P's?
Well, it's 1080p, against 900p.
Resolution.
It's resolution. It's how many, it's, yes. It's, and there's been many studies to show that you really can't tell the difference between 900p and 1080p. I just think that's a really ridiculous thing to get excited about, to get panties in a bunch over, but people are, and I understand that people want the best possible game.
Fill me in on this, like who's on what side?
Okay,
is somebody so, all like, no, I definitely can tell how many peas there are, or
no,
or two,
no,
like,
well, people say that, yes, and I'm sure at a certain point you can definitely tell, but the point is that the new Assassin's Creed game Unity, which is coming out on next gen consoles, they've announced that it will be 900p on both systems. And the initial explanation for that was that they wanted it to be, they wanted parity across all the systems. So everybody said, well, the Xbox One is less powerful than the PS4. An example of this is the fact that Dragon Age Inquisition from EA is coming out at 1080p on PS4 and 900p on the Xbox One. So people are crying foul that it got gimped on the PS4 in order to be exactly the same on both systems.
All right. Look, the only reason this debate exists is because not enough people are PC gamers. Because if you're a PC gamer and you have the ability to run that slider bar up and down, like, yes, all the way to the top on resolution. Oh, wait, there's a drawback. I have to make everything go 15 frames per second and lose all of my awesome shaders, whatever. Oh, well, let me dial it down or whatever. Stupid. Look, these people know what they're doing. 720 with everything turned on with 4S and, or 4X anti-aliasing and in higher quality textures and all that looks better than 1080 just because he dialed it up to 1080. I don't understand. But It's like the only way you could complain about this is if you've never been the one in charge of deciding your own personal preference between resolution and quality of content. If ever played a PC game and you decided, oh, wait, no, I'd rather go 1280 by 720 because it's smooth, it's 60 frames per second, it looks great, I do anti-aliasing and whatever, then you're done. The discussion's over.
But the controversy here is many multi-platform games have come out with a better frame rate and higher resolution on the PS4 because it is marginally, slightly, substantially, whatever you want to call it, more powerful hardware. Assassin's Creed has had a marketing deal with Sony where Sony had been giving them money to co-market the game for years. Assassin's Creed Unity is the first game to receive marketing money from Xbox and no longer be tied to PlayStation. It's been on the Xbox stage at E3. The commercials all end with an Xbox bumper at the end of it. And the game now, unlike many other multi-platform games, is going to be 900p on both consoles, whereas other games, like Jeff mentioned, the new Dragon Age is not. Diablo then ended up getting patched to receive 1080p. After they took away the Kinect function, they unlocked more power in the box by removing Kinect. And this game now, whether or not it's a conspiracy or it looks not like the best thing, when they constrain it, the first game that's being co-marketed by Xbox, they constrain it, and then someone straight up comes out and says, we're doing it to make sure that both versions are the same, that's BS. And now they've come out and clarified it, i.e. someone's put out a...
Mark from marketing got involved.
Yeah, totally. And good for him, but too freaking late. You know, he came out and said, there's a quote where Vincent Pontrebant said, I simply chose the wrong words when talking about the game's resolution, and for that, I'm sorry.
And my hand got slapped.
Exactly. His statement is true. He chose the wrong words. He didn't say, I said wrong information.
Well, they do say...
Right? He chose the wrong words.
Ubisoft does not constrain its games, and he also said... why would we ever do anything to hold back our game? We've been working on it for 4 years. Why would we not want it to look
money.
As good as we... Well, the thing that upsets me about it, and yes, people, even in our chat room right now, Space Bob mentioned that, you know, that the next generation, he said the next generation consoles were advertised as 1080p, 60 frames per second machines, but now we're not getting it, and we're being told 900p, 30 frames per second is enough. I get that. I think... Honestly, this is all going to melt away in a year. This is just a function of these consoles being relatively new, and you're going to see wild improvements in what people are going to be able to squeeze out of these boxes, both of the boxes. And yes, if you're a PS4 owner exclusively, maybe you wanted those extra P's if your system could do it, but really it's not, you're not going to notice it. It's just it's a number. People want the bigger number. And if you didn't know what the number was, you wouldn't even care. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. So I will keep defending this and saying that people should get the best version of the game possible. However, a friend of mine and one guy I write with, you'll see something we're writing on TV this coming year. That's going to be fun. But so he has yet to jump into the current generation, and he set up his Xbox 360 in his new place, and we're sitting there playing. I'm like, this looks... he has like a nice TV, and I'm like, wait, what? This is... I'm like, how are you... And he's like, oh... I'm like, is this connected through HDMI? He's like, I don't know. My roommate set it up. And he just has his 360 set up through composite cables to their big, nice TV. And I'm like, you can make this look so much... this is such a crappy picture. He's like, yeah, I don't care.
No, like, nobody cares. We've talked about this a million times. Like, convenience trumps fidelity. Yes, we all could. If fidelity was more important than convenience, then Blu-ray would be king and Netflix would be BS, right?
Right.
So here's the thing. I get it. Congratulations, PS4 owners. You genuinely have a slightly better piece of hardware than the other guy. That does not make you entitled to insist that every release of everything take advantage of the fact that you have a better, faster car than the other jerk. Like you're not entitled to nothing, man.
You can address your emails to Brian Brushwood at...
Brian@schwood.com. Come at me, bro. Keep in mind, you're talking to a member of the PC Master Race, because it's like, if you want to go pixel for pixel, I'll dominate all of you.
Whatever. I agree with that. However, you should be more pissed than anybody as the PC Master Race, because Assassin's Creed as notoriously terrible on PC. They do a slipshod, you know, version of those games, and you aren't able to max things out. They are ridiculous on the PC. So, you know,
you want me to be mad at them too? Because I will be. I'll be mad at any of you who aren't.
let's be mad.
I'm not mad at all, y'all. Why can't every single game come out immediately on PC for the highest resolution possible? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. All right, well, on that note, I don't know where to go from there. I guess we can wrap this up. There's not really any other big stories. Let's talk about what we're playing. Let's get to the playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. Playlist is usually where you guys would call in. However, as I mentioned at the top of the show, phone system is down. Phone system is down. So I apologize for that. Hopefully it'll be back next week. But we've been playing some stuff. Brian, what's on your playlist this week?
Dude, okay, two things. And there's one thing I want to know if it's on your playlist. I'm in a bit of a different position from most of you guys in that, like, I live half of my life pretending to be a, you know, 19-year-old bachelor and the rest of my life in the reality of being a 39-year-old dad of three. And so every so often, though, those worlds collide and it makes me extremely happy. For example, a few weeks ago, I came over and you introduced me to a couple of video or board games. We played Love Letters. We played For Sale. And I introduced you to the card game of Kent.
Yes.
Also called Kemp's online. Loved the experience of teaching you all those. And I was so excited that the next week I came home And I was wondering, like, which of these are going to play with my daughters? So I got all my kids around. So it was my 10-year-old, my 6-year-old, my wife, and me. We played Kent. We played For Sale. We played, and most importantly, we played Love Letters, which went over really, really well. Outside of that, though, in video game land, I've been playing the heck out of Far Cry 3, which is maybe my pick for the most underrated game of the last year. Far Cry 3, from the moment it begins, from the setup of the world, it's inherently ridiculous in some regards, but it feels so good. And it's a world that I believe and I get sunk into. And it's like, I just want to shoot bad guys. And I love it. I love it, man.
Awesome.
That's what I'm up to.
Well, we'll get into the tabletop stuff during tabletop time, but I definitely want to talk about Far Cry 3 because Far Cry 4 is right around the corner. Is that what got you into Far Cry 3? Were you excited about 4 or just sort of?
No. Oh, Steam sale popped up.
Yeah.
It's like it was $5 in a taco and you got Far Cry 3. So I'm like, well, in, obviously. And it was one of those, there are a lot of games that you play because everyone says you should play them. And I am a notorious game starter and a poor game finisher. But in the case of Far Cry 3, man, like the opening sequence, the first 20 minutes were just such a punch to the gut where it's like you think it's going to be one kind of game. And then you're like, oh, wow, that escalated quickly, right? Yeah. And you find yourself like, I guess it's this game. And not only that, but there's a whole hero's journey I need to go on for this, you know? So
yeah, it's a really well-designed game in a lot of ways. It was on my list of top games of the year as well. And it's fantastic, especially on the PC. It looks beautiful on the PC. I really wish, when I initially played it, I had it on 360, and it just doesn't even compare to the PC version. So props to the PC Master Race there. But it's so well-designed in giving you wonderful carrots on sticks and making all of the different functionality of the game desirable. So putting those little hooks in of, oh man, oh, if I could, I want to do this. So all I need is a larger pouch for ammo.
You find yourself unironically thinking like, man, if I could just find a Gila monster, I could kill it and skin its bones.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It's like, get excited about that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. You want,
did you finish it, Jeff?
I did not finish it. And it's one of those that I've been meaning to go back to and have not, but, I got very close.
Christian, did you play it?
Yeah, it's great. I feel bad after what we talked about, how you feel about movies. And then if someone says it's meh, it's a great game. Plot wise, the ending disappointed me.
I haven't gotten to the end. All I know is that there's that great moment when your job is to punish one of the other factions by burning down their drug field. And it's like you're sitting there, you're using a flamethrower, you're torching down entire acres of weed, and then like dubstep starts playing, and you realize that everything's sloppy around the edges because you're high from burning all of these crops. I enjoy it immensely.
Yeah, I'm very excited for 4. I think it's going to up the ante even farther on the gut-punching aspect you brought up. It sounds like it's really dark, and the main character from all the promotional stuff we've seen leading up just looks really, really terrifying and interesting. From what I played of 4 at E3, I can't wait.
Did you play Blood Dragon?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, have you?
I've only barely seen the previews for it. It's like, to me, like, I know they're obviously unrelated, but it's like I wanted to finish Far Cry 3 before I got into Blood Dragon.
Oh, I think it would be right up your alley, Brian. I think it's ridiculous. It's got your sense of humor. I mean, it's ridiculous, over the top, sort of crazy. It's got this 80s sensibility to it that's really fun and doesn't take itself so seriously.
The future is the best future.
Right. Yeah, totally. Well, which actually is a great segue to the game I've been playing, because the game I've been playing, well, one of the games I've been playing, is all about that 80s future, and that's Alien Isolation, which is really, really impressed me a lot. It's the game based on the first Alien movie. I guess it's a prequel, or I don't really know. It's been a while since I've seen Alien, so I don't know where the story sits in the timeline. But
you're like her daughter, right?
Are you?
I haven't played it.
I guess you're a Ripley. Not the Ripley.
Yeah, there's DLC that has Sigourney Weaver in it, but I think
Sigourney Weaver has a VO at the beginning of the game. But I don't know if they just pulled that from the movie or if it's an original. Anyway, they're clearly not trying to make you look exactly like Sigourney Weaver. So, and it's a different Ripley. It's a Audrey Ripley or something weird. Anyway.
Daughter.
Oh. Thank you, chat room. As always, you have my back. Red Mist UK says it's a sequel. You are Amanda Ripley, her daughter. So, there's me doing no research at all whatsoever. But I'm still digging the game a lot. When this game was announced, my big worry about it was that it was going to be like, yeah, it's based on the first movie. It's survival horror. And you kill 300 aliens during the course of the, But they do a really great job of making it about one alien, making it about surviving, making it atmospheric, and really drawing out the pace. It's several hours in before you ever see the alien, which I was so happy about.
Good.
Yeah, it's so great. And there's so much of the game, at least at the beginning, and I'm not terribly far into it at this point, but where you are just investigating this space station, and it's super creepy, and nothing in particular is happening, but there's weird noises, and you're just tense, and you're just trying to figure out what's going on, and you're just logging into this wonderful 80s tech, and everything is based on that awesome, like, old CRT monitors, and retro tech is everywhere, and the game looks great, and there's lots of fog and atmospheric stuff, and it's just wonderful, kind of tense thing that I can't play very much. I can't play this game at long stretches because I'm just too tense when I play it.
Scared?
Yeah, man, I'm scared. I'm totally scared. it's just not the kind of thing. It's not the kind of game that I want to relax with. It's a great experience, and I'm really digging it. But I can't. I have to turn it off after like 45 minutes of playing it, because it's just like, okay, I'm getting a crink in my neck because all my tension is there. But it's really cool. I dig it. And the mechanics, the gameplay itself is really great, because it's not just a run around blasting things. It's not jumping and being athletic. It's really creeping through things. It's crawling through things. It's finding bits of stuff that you can fashion into useful items for yourself. It really does feel like surviving on this abandoned space station. I wish there were fewer other humans around, because there's a lot of they sub out, being scared of the alien for being scared of this other human faction. But
sure,
I guess that's a necessary problem to fix. But man, I'm super impressed with the first few hours of the game. I just wish I'd been able to play more of it. I haven't. That, combined with the fact that it's been double XP week for Heroes of the Storm, has meant that I haven't played as much of this as I wanted to. butt. Dig it. Roman MF in the chat room says, I'm curious to see if Jeff likes it so much when he's 15 hours in and battling the alien constantly. And that bums me out to know that that's what I'm headed towards, because I really dig the fact that that's not what it's like right now. But again, very early on. Christian, what's on your playlist?
So I've been spending a lot more time with Shadow of Mordor. It's a game in a long time. I guess Infamous did this for me too, but like when I'm not playing it, I'm thinking about it. To me, that's kind of the hallmark of a great game or a game I'm really into, is that I think about wanting to play it and I'm thinking about what I just did that was cool. So if you're familiar with the game, there's two kind of big worlds or, you know, whatever. In the second part, plugging away, doing well, making good progress. I have every intention of completing the game. I'm having a lot of fun with it. As I have played more, though, some of its problems, or I guess I'm having some of the issues. I was talking to Alex Berg, who was a guest on the show before, former artistic director at UCB, and we were at UCB chatting about the game. He's super into it, playing, and he's like, "Yeah, man, and I love the Nemesis system, and it's so much fun." And I mean, these guys keep killing me, and I just keep going back for them. And I was like, "Really? Maybe it's because I've played so much Batman, and I'm pretty good at Batman. I just haven't died much. I thought maybe it's a little easier." And he was like, "Oh man, not me." Then I went home and played like 4 or 5 hours that night, and just got my butt handed to me. Like, I got into some stretches where I was getting creamed, and I think I spoke too soon when I was talking to Berg. But I feel like, and I don't know if it's just the power of next gen, or it's intentional design or a design flaw for this game. So the Nemesis system, again, trying to explain what's kind of hard to explain. You're fighting orcs. It's in Middle-earth, right? Lord of the Rings world. And you're fighting orcs, and some of them are captains, war chiefs, you know, ranked, named people that have names, a little bit of backstory, and strengths and weaknesses to them. And if you go into your, you know, whatever you want to call it, the Batman detective mode or Assassin's Creed, you know, whisper, whatever it is, right? You can see these people, you can mark them, you can, if you have intel on them, you can get perks on them, whatever, whatever, whatever. I've found in this game, for me, I will be on a mission going to kill one of these war chiefs or kill a captain or whatever. And oftentimes I feel like in open world or sandbox type games that when you then engage in that encounter, what I would then call the herds or the random open worldy people won't come passing into your event, if that makes sense. And in this game, I feel like I'm engaged with the war chief, and then all of a sudden, like a Walking Dead herd, there's just a million dudes run up on me, and 8 of them are other captains.
Gotta watch for the pats, man.
And then a war chief stumbles along.
Gotta watch for the pats. The patrols.
It's crazy. And I just feel like I wasn't used to that. And I'm like, wait, I scanned this world. I marked the captains that are in there. There were none other around. I don't know where these guys came from. I'm not in a stronghold. And it's like the wind changed, and I just get steamrolled. Still super fun, but so I don't know if that's an intentional design or if that's just like a weird quirk of how their open world is presented. But like, I'll be fighting one, and when you first engage with the war chief, it'll be like, "Oh, human scum, Orc the Destroyer's gonna have his way with you." And then you'll get this little, you know, whatever animation.
You're saying he has
a speech
impediment?
And then I'll like go to battle him, and then right after that, another guy will hit me and be like, "Hello, it's me, the barbarian of the knives. I'm gonna have a," and I'm like, "Son of a." but man, still super fun. I don't know. Have you played more of it, Jeff?
Yeah, I'm still, again, still early in that. But I dig that game a lot. I get that, and I have experienced some of the being punked by other things while I'm like, "I wasn't even fighting you. I was fighting that guy." But I tend to be dying more than I want to be. And the dying in this game really feels impactful because you're like, "I just empowered that dude." Durr. But yeah. I'm still really high.
I just want to meet the barbarian of the knives. He sounds awesome.
Not a real one, unfortunately. They have better names than that. My other issue with this game, and again, maybe I think it's an intentional design thing, but someone that maybe has game OCD or just past experience with this type of game, I'll start on a mission, right? And it's like, go wipe out 3 whatever's, you know, clear this area. And you go and I do that, and then it's like, boink, now do this. And I'm like, oh, I only have hardly any health. I did the thing I was supposed to do, and now I'm not going to get a checkpoint. I got to do it. And it's like, boink, now kill this boss. And I'm like, you've got to be freaking there. I'm not going to be able to, son of a. And like, I like to know when I hover over the mission what my mission is. And there are a few that have been hard where I'm like, I died a few times, like, oh, I can do it. I've got to clear out this third area. Did it. So, you got to be freaking kidding me.
Yeah.
A boss? and it's frustrating. But again, really, really like the game. And another reason why, you know, that, and you mentioned Far Cry 4, why Drive Club will probably not get much of a rotation whenever it works.
Well, the reason stuff isn't in my rotation is because of Heroes of the Storm. This week was the for real alpha instead of the sort of fakey alpha I've been playing for the last 6 months or whatever. So they had the last, what they claim to be the last big wipe of all XP, which is a heartbreaker. All my gold, all my purchases, all my XP gone. Starting at zero, starting loading up the game, have to start with the tutorial, even though I've put in well over 100 hours on that game already. Which is a little bit of a heartbreaker, but there's also, it's kind of fun to start building up, and it's for real now. And they did a really nice thing where they said it was double XP week for all the alpha people, and they, you know, gave some freebies to alpha people. And God dang it, I love this game. I love Heroes of the Storm so much. I've been having so much fun. They've added in the replay feature now. Every game you play is being recorded, and you can watch it back just like you could with StarCraft games, where it's not recorded as a video file. It's recorded as data in the game, so the files are much smaller, so you can record every single game you have and watch it back at varying speeds and, you know, focus on certain areas. And it's great for analyzing what went right, what went wrong, and just reliving glories of awesome awesome kills and stuff like that. I'm going to be talking about this game for a long time, and I apologize to everyone who listens.
You and I talked about this at the football game, and I don't know if you mentioned it on mic, but I think it is interesting for people that maybe are hesitant to get into the game. I mean, you have a group of people you play with, but when they're not available, you still really enjoy playing with randoms, right? Like, this game has you captured that well that you'll just play with random
people.
It's
hit and miss. I mean, you can definitely get into a team of morons who have no idea that it's a team game. There's some idiot who's laning by himself, and the whole team is in a team fight, and you're 4-on-5 because some jerk is off doing his own thing. You're like, whoa, we can't win 4-on-5. You cannot win. So you have to be here, and then people are jerks. That'll happen. But I think the game really rewards the best kind of play, and it's not like Dota, it's not like League, where you have to get these last hits and everything has to be, you can be really screw over your teammates. This game, you can screw over your teammates, but it's so much easier and so much better to play as a team that I've this whole week, because the guys that I play with were out of town, and it was double XP week, and I wanted to get that sweet, sweet XP. I have been playing a lot by myself, and for the most part, had really positive experiences. So, really cool. All right, so that's what's on our playlist. I'm going to get to Brian's stuff. So I think it's about tabletop time. So JV Phobic in the chat room asked you to explain what Kent is.
Okay, it's also, I believe it's more commonly known as Kemps. So if you're going to look it up, look up Kemps. But I learned it as Kent. And it is an astonishingly simple game. There are various variations. You can make up your own rules as far as like whether you're allowed to have audio cues or physical cues or whatever. But the idea is simple. Everyone's dealt four cards.
This is a standard playing card deck, by the way.
Yeah, correct. And then you deal four cards out. Everybody face up is able to take cards and then discard them from their hand. So you have essentially four cards at any given time. And there are four cards on the table at any given time. The goal is to get four of a kind, but you don't win just by having four of a kind. You win when your partner figures out that you have four of a kind and says the word Kent or Kemps. And so in this case, let's say Jeff and I were playing beforehand, we would come up with some kind of code, whether it's a gesture or, ways allow you to do things like cough or slap the table or make noise. Others of them say that, no audio cues are allowed. To me, it's more funny if you do audio cues, because then you're able to cover everything up with more noise, and the more noise you get, the funnier it gets. But I played it again with the kids after playing it with you, Jeff, and it was, that game lives up. It's great.
Well, you
great.
Left out a big part where if the other team catches you making the signal before you're able to say it and they call it out, then you lose.
You can shout obvious, right, and then the game's over and then they get the point. It's, fast hands. It's, like tricks in spades or hearts or bridge or whatever. But man, oh man, is it a lot of fun, because very quickly you realize you're not playing the cards. You're not playing what you're dealt. You're playing each other.
Yeah.
And that's what's awesome.
It was great fun. It was a game I'd never heard of when you taught it to us. And man, it's great fun because it's ridiculousness. You end up making weird movements and gestures and noises to throw the people off.
Everybody has traits all of a sudden. Because you want to cover up the moment, you're grabbing things and not quite drinking, but then about to drink, and then you do drink, and then somebody goes, obvious, tricked you. I was just taking a regular drink.
Right. It's good stuff. And you also dug Love Letter, huh? With the
yeah,
fam?
I did. The kids liked it too. It's very fast, very easy to get into. Our 6-year old. You also showed us For Sale, which is a bit much for the 6-year old. But everything else, we're continuing to play.
Very cool, Christian. You've been playing a tried and true favorite of mine from way back as well. Boggle
Deluxe.
Nice.
If you don't know Boggle Deluxe, relatively easier to find now. It's the 5x5 grid. My wife, what's great? Well, here's what's great about board games, right? I feel like board games are me in the 90s at an arcade, where I thought I was good at Street Fighter because there was no internet and I just dominated my friends. My wife is a Boggle master, but of our group of friends.
Right,
you know what I mean? Like, she might be horrible in terms of the real world, but she holds it down, and every now and again, she likes reminding me how horrible I am, and we'll play Boggle. I'm so bad at that game.
I love that game.
I find it fun. I find Deluxe. I almost can't play regular Boggle, if that makes sense. It's the 4x4 grid. Doesn't do it for me. Boggle Deluxe 5x5. I know it's not a European game or whatever, but I think in terms of dumb family games, if people, I think it's leaps and bounds above Monopoly.
Oh, for sure.
And it's spelling words. It's right. It's Words with Friends. It's all that crap. You've played it before. But shaking that box and playing Boggle with people with the timer going and sweating because you realize you're stupid and you've written 5 words and you've seen your wife write 30 can be an air quote good time.
So we're about to hit the biggest week in the board gaming world. What E3 is for video games, the Essen Spiel is for board games, and that is happening in Germany next week. I'm very excited. I'm really trying to get a good guest that'll be there on the show next week. Hopefully that'll happen. If not, maybe a few weeks after. But you'll hear me talking about a lot of things. It is just like E3. This is the place where dozens and dozens and dozens of big, high-profile new games are announced, are shown for the first time. People can purchase them in limited quantities, and they become these talked about. There's like a 500 print run of something that people want and can't get for another 2 years after that or something, and there's 500 of them floating around because people rushed the show floor in Essen and grabbed them. And the Essen Spiel in Germany is a massive, massive, massive show. It is gigantic. On my bucket list for places to go. But there is some early news out of Essen, and even New York Comic Con had some interesting things. So I wanted to bring up some board gaming stuff that I think you guys actually will be into as well. The first of which was at New York Comic Con. If you're my generation, you remember fondly, I think, because I do, Garbage Pail Kids. I was so into Garbage Pail Kids. In fact, I once... I had a complete collection of G.I. Joe comics that I traded to my grade school friend for his complete first and second series Garbage Pail Kids.
Wow. Yeah.
And you know how much I love comics, so that was major. Steve Jackson Games, the guys who make Munchkin, among a lot of other things, and Ogre and all these other games. Munchkin was one of the first games I ever got into. They're kind of a powerhouse game developer. They're doing two Garbage Pail Kids board games, one of which is this dexterity game called Snot Shots, Garbage Pail Kids Snot Shots, which sounds disgusting. Not as excited about that one as I am the other game, which is called Garbage Pail Kids Disgusting Dice Game, which is going to have its own custom dice and cards. It's going to use the original art from the old Garbage Pail Kids. And it's all in celebration of the 30th anniversary of Garbage Pail Kids, which makes me feel extremely old. But I'm super excited about this. Do you guys remember Garbage Pail Kids?
Well, I mean, certainly, yes, absolutely. But part of the beauty of, and I use that term loosely, part of the engagement of the Garbage Pail Kids is the simplicity and the uniqueness. Like when I think about Garbage Pail Kids, I think about Magic the Gathering. Mm. I think of these precise categories and this exquisite, you know, give or take art on each one and the categories and what they mean to me. It's, to be honest, I'm a bit surprised that it's taken this long to get to a card game with them, right?
Yeah, they were cards for, you know, so it's interesting that there was no game associated with them. But when I was a kid, my little best friend and I used to spend hours making up names for Garbage Pail Kids. So fun. Yeah, so this is great. It's a kind of a resurgence of that brand. I don't think there's been much done with that brand in a long, long time. And Steve Jackson makes, for the most part, very good games. Some misses in his catalog, but I'm excited. I'm excited to try this out. And I love dice games, and I love custom dice. So,
can you verify whether or not this is in any way affiliated with the horrible 1980s Garbage Pail Kids movie?
The very disturbing, weird Garbage Pail Kids movie. Yeah.
Yeah, for people that don't know, Garbage Pail Kids was spawned kind of as a reaction to Cabbage Patch Kids.
Right. And ask your parents what Cabbage Patch Kids were.
Similar looking things, but they're like Pukes Mix Pukerston, and it's like a Cabbage Patch looking kid, but like sitting in a pile of puke.
Yeah, well, the idea was that, so the big selling point of Cabbage Patch Kids was that every Cabbage Patch Kid was unique. You bought your Cabbage Patch Kid. It had its own name. It had its own favorite food. It had its own favorite color all printed up. And no Cabbage Patch Kid was exactly the same as any other Cabbage Patch Kid. Well, the idea behind Garbage Pail Kids is, first of all, they're disgusting. But every Garbage Pail Kid had a duplicate. So every card, the drawing on the card, there were two versions of it with two different names. So Bomb Bill was all no. So Adam Bomb was like Bomb Bill, and so you would get both cards, but they had the exact same art. Anyway, that was the big thing, and they were disgusting, and they came with gum that was terrible. But I collected them, and we loved them as kids, and parents thought they were terrible because they were all about boogers and farts and killing and zombies, and it was great. It was great.
I can't. I mean, I have a.
It was great, and parents are dumb.
Oh man. Okay. So the couple of other pre-Essen announcements that I think are really cool. First of all, you brought up Magic the Gathering. There's going to be a Magic the Gathering strategy board game. We don't know anything about it. It's going to be announced in I think a few days, the first day of Essen. So we'll be talking about that next week. But I love the idea that they're expanding Magic the Gathering and they're adding a strategy board game to the mix. If it's well designed, I think that could be a huge, huge thing, using some of the same mechanics, but making it not a collectible card game. Because I think a lot of people are turned off by the collectability of Magic the Gathering. And if you have this sort of closed system, I think that could be really cool. And the characters and storylines in Magic are interesting and could really foster a new game.
Right on.
Yeah. Lastly, this is a huge thing for me because and top five games, board games of all time, is a game called Power Grid. It's a Friedman Friess game. He's a very famous designer. He's done a lot of really cool stuff. This is a very, very popular game. Again, one of my favorites of all time. It's coming up on a big anniversary. I think it's 10th anniversary. Anyway, they're doing a deluxe version of Power Grid. Power Grid has many expansions. basically, the idea of Power Grid, as you could probably tell by its title, is that you are powering cities. You are investing in power stations. You are specializing in certain types of power, be they dirty old oil and garbage and nuclear power, or clean renewable energies like wind. And you're investing in these types of energy, and you're using that energy to power cities and make money. And you're trying to outwit other players by playing the market. So if a lot of people are in the oil market, then oil becomes very, very cheap and doesn't make much money when you sell it. So you're trying to specialize in energies that other people at the table aren't playing. It's a really cool game. A lot of people complain because, like Monopoly, it has paper money, and nobody likes paper money. Paper money is annoying because it feels cheap. It's crappy. Well, the new Power Grid Deluxe has plastic coins for the money. It's got a whole redesigned board with spots for the energy market right on the board. Now there's a place where there's an auction phase in that game where you're buying power plants. And usually that was sort of just off the board. Now there's a place on the board for that, which is kind of neat. It's got all new artwork for the power station cards. It's been completely redesigned. It looks really beautiful. It's a giant board. Power Grid has had many releases of new boards because basically they're maps. So in the original Power Grid release, one side was the United States and one side was Europe, which is what the Power Grid Deluxe is going to be. But then there's been pretty much any place in the world you can think of, somebody has released a Power Grid board for. So they're not really clear on whether those are going to be compatible with this deluxe version, but it really looks nice. They've redone all of the little pieces, all the little meeple pieces to have them be more clear. I'm really excited for this, and it looks like it's going to be coming out in just the next few days. They announced it, and it'll be coming out October 16th is what evidently they have said. So if anybody listening hasn't tried Power Grid, boy, it is a fantastic game. Kind of complicated to learn, but boy, it is a fantastically designed, excellent game. A lot of math. You gotta figure out how much you're gonna make by adding things up. So I tend to play that game with a little calculator by my side, which is probably the worst thing I could say to make people try it. It takes a calculator to play, everybody.
You just want to simplify things,
yeah,
right?
You just want to make it quick. Just because the way you play that game is you're trying to open up these routes between things. You're trying to send your power to different cities to power those cities, and it costs a certain amount to go between them. So you're trying to go, okay, well, if that costs 12 and that costs 8 and that costs 4, it just, you can do that quick in your head, but when you're trying to do multiple routes, it's easy to just use a calculator to do it and figure out how much stuff's going to cost. But, fantastic game, and there's going to be lots more news coming out of Essen next week, so I'm excited for that. All right, dudes, we have reached the climactic ending of our show. Is there any other video game stuff you wanted to bring up, either of you, Christian?
Oh, you know what? I actually do. I want to mention that I finally bought, downloaded, and started playing Wasteland 2. Oh. And it's like a time machine, brings me back to everything I loved about the original Wasteland, about specifically the first two Fallouts, because people don't remember that Fallout was originally a turn-based tactical strategy game, and Fallout 3 got very much away from that, whereas Wasteland 2 goes back to its roots, and it's way, way good.
I cannot wait to play that game. As much of a fan of Divinity Original Sin as I was this year, it's my game of the year so far. I really am so excited about Wasteland 2. And with the fact that whatchamacallit got delayed, the other one of those, Pillars of Eternity, I think it's called. Yeah. So Wasteland, I'm so glad that you like it. It sounds awesome.
Yeah.
All right, so Brian, thanks so much for being part of the show. This was really fun. Where can people see your stuff this week?
I don't know. Just check me out on Twitter, twitter.com/Schwood. That's S-H-W-O-O-D, no C in Schwood. I'll do my best to let you know. We got some TV stuff coming out here shortly. I want to keep you guys posted on everything. Love you bunches.
That's exciting. And stick around, guys, because we still have our parting gift to get to. But Christian, tell me what's going on with you this week.
Man, I don't even know. Just started back again. And Anthony Carboni, you might know him. Jeff came to last week's show with Jess Lane. We co-host the show every Wednesday at the Clubhouse in Los Angeles, which is on Vermont between Hollywood and Sunset. Tons of free parking, and it's a really cool kind of indie improv theater space hangout. And I do a Wednesday show there, 10 p.m., called Extra Credit. And this week's lineup is pretty insane. It's every Wednesday at 10, and it's free. It's just like a community thing. It's the Clubhouse. Come hang out, watch a show if you're in town. If you're in L.A., come to that. I'm on Twitter, SPICER. Mr. Cannata, what you got popping?
Well, you can always listen to the Slash Filmcast to hear me talk about movies. We just did Gone Girl last week, which was a really well-received episode. And we're talking about Stretch this week, which is an interesting film you should listen to us discuss. Also, check out We Have Concerns. It's a comedy show that I do with the aforementioned Anthony Carboni. It's not something like anything that you've heard me do before. So if you haven't checked it out, I think you would dig it. WeHaveConcerns.com is that. And yeah, that's going to do it for this week's episode. But before we go, we do have a parting gift to give you. Chris, or, Brian, do you have a suggestion for something people should check out this week?
Wasteland 2, man. I think that's my gig.
Sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot there. But yeah, Wasteland 2, man. Awesome.
You know what? Actually, if we're going to go outside of the realm of games, I will say that if you haven't listened to it, you should either get the audiobook or download the actual ebook for your friend of mine, Andrew Main's Angel Killer. Ooh. Is now in mass market paperback release, and it's really, really good.
Oh, man. I got to check that out. Yeah, for sure. Christian, how about you? Parting gift?
As disappointed as I've been by Gotham on Fox, watch The Flash on CW. It's really good comic book so far. Comic book television definitely has a hint of CW-ness to it. But in terms of pilots, what a great pilot. Effective, set things up. I think people will like it if you haven't seen it. Check it out.
I have a book recommendation as well. I read, while I was on my vacation, on my honeymoon, I read the new David Mitchell. He's the guy who wrote Cloud Atlas. His new book is called Bone Clocks. Holy smokes, is it good. This is a book that takes place from 1984 through 2044 or something like that. So it starts in the past, goes to the future. It's so, so good. I'm going to do an NLB mini about it because I have lots of things to talk about. But it proves that genre stuff, fantasy stuff, sci-fi stuff can also be literature. It's really cool, and there's some awesome like full-on sci-fi battles and stuff in this book. Really cool. That's Bone Clocks by David Mitchell. Super good. All right, dudes, that's gonna do it for this episode of DLC. We will be back next Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific time if you want to listen in live. Hopefully we will be able to take calls then. Again, apologize for not being able to do that this week, but we will be back then. Until that time, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.